Here we are, live, Jimmy D and the Wolf podcast.
Hello.
Hello. So, it's been a long time.
Yeah. It's been
probably a month at least since we've done a podcast.
I believe it has.
And what's happened in that meantime?
Well, we got to go to Eastern Europe and meet a bunch of really cool people. You know, it's my biggest takeaway from the whole thing was the people that we met. Man, we made some great friends along the way. Got to see our friend Alex Mittler.
Absolutely.
And it was amazing having a friend there, you know, kind of like a safe haven, so to speak.
Yeah. Feel like we know Alex, but that's the first time we physically met him.
Right.
So, and his wife, Kanyu.
Great people.
Delightful couple. And that was pretty amazing. And yeah. So we played a bunch of gigs in Ukraine, and we did two in Warsaw, and it was, what was the best gig for you, Jimmy, of the all the ones we did?
The last night.
In Warsaw.
The last night in Warsaw, man, was my favorite one. And I don't know if that was my favorite one just because, like, we'd settled in so much, or the people at that venue were great.
They absolutely were.
And it really helped. Like, we met a guy there that was an Australian Polish guy with an American accent.
Yes.
I know that sounds made up, but it's not. It's 100% true.
He sounded 100% American, but
Mike Cora, he was a Polish guy from Australia, but he had an American accent.
But he'd lived in the US, but he also, a fascinating background, also lived in United Arab Emirates before it became what it is now. He says he missed the old, you know, before they, I saw a picture today of Dubai in 1990. It was just basically a desert with just a few buildings, and now it's, you know, it's got, I think, the most luxurious hotel in the world. And it's got all those palm islands that were from the sky. They look like palm trees that they made those islands, and quite wealthy area. And he knew it before all that, I guess. So he was a fascinating guy. Runs a studio, had a Neve console, which just blows my mind. He just kind of inherited that. Some wealthy guy had it and was just sitting there for 6 years being unused. And I mean, Neve is the holy grail.
Yeah, they're like $1 million, right?
I don't know what they cost. I don't know. I know that David Grohl from the Foo Fighters, and of course the drummer for Nirvana, they recorded on a Neve console in Sound City and in LA, and that's where they recorded the Nevermind album. And he literally bought that console, and they made a movie on it called Sound City, which is basically a story of the console, and David Grohl was in it. If you haven't seen that movie, anyone who's watching and loves music and maybe is a fan of Nirvana or Foo Fighters or music in general, that's a fascinating, fascinating movie, because they talk about how in their heyday, they were also a record label, and they also, that's where the current incarnation, well, the heyday incarnation of Fleetwood Mac came to be. They came in and they were looking for a drummer, or no, sorry, the Mick Fleetwood, who's the giant of a man. He's like 7 feet tall, plays drums for Fleetwood Mac. He had come there because he heard their drum room was incredible. In fact, they didn't even want to paint the walls because they were afraid it would interrupt the sound of this drum room. It was, don't move, don't touch it, don't touch it. And he happened to hear some music being played, and they were, and Peter Green had left because he had some mental issues, personal issues that he had to take care of. They needed a guitar player, and they heard this Lindsey Buckingham playing guitar recording, and they wanted to recruit him to play. And Lindsey Buckingham was with Stevie Nicks at the time, and he said, we come as a package deal. We already have a female singer, Christine McVie. Package deal. Of course, the rest is history. One of the greatest albums of all time, Rumors, the new revamped Fleetwood Mac. Anyway, that happened at Sound City. And the Neve console was there, and David Grohl bought it. And he records with that now. He's all analog. He won't do any digital. In fact, I think it's in the movie, he told his sound engineer, if I find any digital equipment in this control room, you are immediately fired.
Wow.
So everything that was, at least at that point in time, he was all about the analog. Anyway, we're digressing. So a Neve console, a lot of work though. I mean, Michael was saying about how, you know, I don't know if it's a 64, but he said only like 24 work because it's an 80s thing. And a lot of electronics that go bad. He said, you have to know which ones work and which ones you use and which ones you don't move the favorite fader. I mean, I think all that can be repaired, but it's money and it's a lot of time soldering, etc. Maybe the parts are hard to find. What's that?
Finding somebody to work on it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is 30, 40 year old technology, or I mean, not 40 year old board. And you know, the most common way to do it today is digital, but something magic about that. Rupert Neve. In fact, he died recently and he was like 95 and he was living in
town. Really?
Yeah, that was a big deal. I was going to do a video about his career because his knowledge really shaped modern music because some of the best records were made on Neve equipment. And yeah, he was living in the U.S. He's a British man, or was a British man, but he was living in the U.S. when he passed. And he created a new company, he sold Neve, and he created a new company called Rupert Neve Designs. In fact, continued innovating. In fact, I have some Rupert Neve, a couple of pieces of equipment from his new company that are absolutely amazing. They're tape emulators. He took, you know, because a lot of digital, you still want that warm sound. And so people run it through tape decks and reuse, but tape is expensive and they wear out and have to maintain them. So he had the idea, well, what's the main part of that? It's running it through the actual tape head. So he made these devices that use tape heads and runs the electronics signal through them, but there's no moving parts. And I've got it right here. They're called 542s. And when I mix something, I run my mix. I have two of them, one because stereo, left and right. And I run my mix through them, and it really improves the sound. And that's a Rupert Neve thing. His company, he sold Neve and then started a new company. I mean, his name is his name. You know, he sold the company, and I guess somehow he was able to use Rupert Neve Designs is what it says on it. Anyway, yeah. So Michael has a studio in Warsaw with an actual Neve console, which is really cool. And I want to go back there when we go back and visit that studio.
Absolutely. And it was one of those things, like, we met him on our last night, and it was like, man, wish we would have met you on our first night.
Yeah. He's
a really cool guy, and, you know, he had a Neve console, and that was...
And not just him. I mean, the guy that ran the club, Victor, I think he said. Remember, he introduced himself at the very beginning. And then the sound guy, and what else?
The sound guy did a great job.
Did a great job, and... they said we'd come back and play there at any time. Can't wait to do that.
Absolutely. And the city itself was amazing.
Warsaw is a gem. I mean, I almost don't want to talk about it because people may go there and spoil it.
Yeah. It's
very inexpensive. Michael was saying you live there for $1,000 a month. And that's probably not living, depending on what your level of, you know, what you're used to and what your style of living, but it's very inexpensive compared to US standards. And coffee can be equally expensive, though. Go to some coffee shops and it's $4 US for a coffee. I'm like, what? This is the same as in the US.
Americanized.
Coffee. But yet you can, Alex said you could get an apartment for like what, 150? What was it, 150 a month? 200 a month?
300 bucks.
300 was what it was? Yeah, I thought he said if you wanted to really go like a studio, you could get a studio for 150, I thought he said. But maybe in the best part of town. Yeah, I did some recording there, and I wished I had known about, in another studio, I wish I had known about Michael's place. I would have gone there and recorded, but you know, next time. And one of my favorite ones was in Ukraine, as far as gigs, was in Smila, Ukraine, with Andrew and his friend. And I just posted a video on my YouTube channel today of my first two songs from that set. I included when Andrew introduced me, of course, in Ukrainian. And Tim Wolf is still Tim Wolf, even in Ukrainian. So those people, and then actually the picture that I got, I made it on my YouTube, I made it my banner. Remember that picture we took at the end with some of those guys? And you're in the picture.
Those guys were sweethearts, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Nice
guys in the world.
Yeah. And the food was good. We ate there first. And then everybody was so welcoming and just phenomenal.
Well,
then there also was the festival.
Yeah.
The medieval festival.
That was the cultural experience.
That was very much.
Just getting to be there was amazing.
You want to talk about what they were doing at that festival during the day?
See, man, these great big monster guys, like 6'2", 270-pound dudes, some of them. Not all of them. I hate to generalize, but there were some of them that were that big or bigger.
Big.
No, you saw those dudes. Some of them were massive guys. And, you know, Ukraine is per capita. Oh,
Crystal's on here. Your sister.
Sissy. Love you too, Sissy. And Ukraine, like, per capita is a dominant force in wrestling. And the Olympics, they're dominant, like, above and beyond per capita. And these great big dudes, and they were wearing, like, armor, like medieval knight armor, and they would have five guys on each team, and they have like javelins, swords, axes, and
those weapons look like they could really do some damage.
Dude had a mace,
hatchets,
and they would just maul each other, man. And the rules, the best of my understanding was that if somebody got knocked down, then they were out.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and then three of your guys were out, the way I understood it, once three of your team were down, then he would go, stop!
Yep. Well, each team had a captain, right? Because there would be one guy on each team that had a different color.
Right, 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 right.
Different color shirt on under his armor.
Yeah.
And the dude that had on the black shirt
on the one team. Did they win? I think they won, didn't they?
He won. He ended up like they got it down to one person, and he destroyed everybody.
Yeah. Didn't he throw? There was one where somebody got thrown over the fence.
Yeah.
There was a fence around there. A fence is maybe 5 feet high. And I remember there was one fight. They literally, one guy got thrown over the fence.
Yeah. I got some cool video of it, man. But you could tell that the guy wearing the black shirt like lived for it. Because every time that they would say stop, he would get like
disappointed, drop shoulder thing.
You could tell. He'd be going at it and they'd say stop, and he's like, you know, like he didn't want to stop. That dude.
They're wearing 55, he said 25 kilos, which is about 55 pounds of armor, of what they were wearing. And in between, because we would stand on the stage and they would like congregate some of them in front of the stage, and they would take off, you know, to rest as the ones that hadn't been eliminated. And you could see all of the stuff underneath, you know, that they, you know, all the layers.
Those guys were monsters, man.
Yeah. It looks scary. I mean, literally,
yeah, absolutely.
Somebody could get hurt with the
100%. And they were swinging those swords as hard as they could. And
absolutely. Like,
as hard as they could, dude. They were not like taking it easy on each other. They were going at it hardcore. And the funniest part to me was, like, when it was over and we left there and we walked to another part of the festival, and you saw, like, these little kids in training playing that same game.
Absolutely.
Like, yes. Little Spartan children.
Yes.
You know, and they're hitting each other as hard as they can with their little weapons. That was wild. It was kind of like stepping in a time machine, as was a lot of the country, you know. My biggest takeaway, man, is I developed a real, and I think you did too, a real soft spot for Ukrainian people. Because, like, when you drive around, compared to the U.S., it's fairly primitive, and just didn't see people smiling, you know what I mean? And my favorite show was our last night in Warsaw, but my favorite moment was in Smila.
The one where I said is like my favorite. I think it was my favorite gig. Right,
because when we walked in to the venue, everybody in there was gone. And when we walked out, everybody was smiling, grinning ear to ear, you know. And it was just the biggest thing that I noticed in Ukraine immediately was like, why aren't these people smiling? And, you know, and I'm smiling at strangers and they're looking at me like, why is this guy? They were kind of taken back by that. That I was smiling at them like it's something they weren't used to. So I think my favorite part about the whole experience is that we made some people smile, man.
Yeah. And the thing, their natural assets that they have in the country.
Insane.
They've got, as far as farmland, you kept saying that it reminded you of Indiana because it looked like Indiana.
It did. Ukraine looks just like Indiana. It looks like, I described it to my friend the other day. He said, what does Ukraine look like? I said, it looks like Indiana with bad farmers.
Exactly.
It really does.
Because, you know, the corn is like only, you know, 4 feet high, you know, instead of 10 feet high, like it is in the U.S. or 9 feet. I don't know. I mean, the corn, if you have a good year, I mean, the corn gets really tall. You can get lost in there. Now you couldn't get lost in that corn.
No.
They didn't fertilize. They didn't use chemicals. Right. It's pretty obvious. The sunflower seeds were like 3 feet high. I'm like, what? So the sunflower plants. I used to raise sunflowers a bit when I lived in South Dakota when I was a farmer. And, you know, so they don't have the fertilizer, but yet they have, according to what we read, 1/3 of the world's good quality black dirt, 1/3. And they have a port there that they can ship it out. They can feed the world. There's actually, but they're in their own way. They have a lot of corruption in the government, and they don't fertilize. They don't use practices. They were telling us about this one guy who apparently made it work and owns his own ships and owns a whole bunch of land and has become one of the richest Ukrainians in existence. He kind of figured it out, apparently adopted American or Western farming practices. I don't remember that guy's name, but for the most part, and then you can't outsiders can't buy land. Cause the first thing I thought was, man, let's buy some land here because this is going to explode. But it's illegal. It's not allowed for a non-Ukrainian person to buy farmland. So, you know, they've got all this asset that is not being utilized.
Untapped.
And maybe never will be tapped. Remember the guy that gave us a ride to
Kiev?
Gave us a ride to Kiev. So the night before, we wanted to get a taxi ride to Kiev from Smila, and went to the front desk and started talking to the beautiful girl behind the counter who didn't speak any English but had the most expressive face. It was hilarious. She would make I don't want to, you know, talking to her, you can understand what she was thinking just by how she would express her face. Anyway, she brought her friend who spoke English, and basically we learned the next day, hooked up her boyfriend to take us to Kiev. And when he pulled up the next day, it was an older car, and they were arguing.
Yeah, dude, that argument broke every language barrier. I knew exactly what she was saying and like exactly what he was saying. It was so funny. She was screaming at him. She's like, da, da, net.
Yes, yes, no, no, basically. Yeah. Is it yes or is it no?
Right. And you know exactly what she was saying. Well, you said you'd give him a ride. Are you going to give him a ride? And the car is like about to explode, dude. That car, we're lucky. By the grace of God, he got
it. By the grace of God.
Because the car is like 400 degrees or something like that.
It was overheating the entire way. I don't know if he made it back. It's a three-hour drive from where we were.
Yeah, driving. The car is like pegged on red the entire time.
He didn't want to go because he knew his car was going to overheat, but she had gotten this, right, this job for him that make really good money for them as a family or a couple. And I think it was $100 and some bucks, which is probably double the going rate, but he needed it.
He and did. Well, and the exchange there, it was 26 Ukrainian UAH. We couldn't pronounce it, so we called them Ukrainian hoo-has.
Hoo-has.
UAH.
UAH, we called them hoo-has. Hoo-has. How many hoo-has you got, Jimmy?
Yeah, all right.
Going back and forth.
I couldn't believe it, dude. With the first night I had the exchange, I handed her like a $100 bill, and she gave me a stack of cash like that. I was like, wow. And then once I figured out what you could really do with it, it's like, well, I could retire here with like $1,000. But so it was 26 of those per American dollar, roughly.
Yeah, yeah.
And
we paid over $100 to get driven to Kiev, and that's probably enough to live on for a month, maybe. Or, sure. I'm not sure. I mean,
well, the funny part was, it's like, oh, sometimes those little God coincidences. Like, we couldn't get an Uber when we were going to catch our flight to get out, to leave, to come home. And the funniest, most ironic part of the whole trip was we're just standing there, and this guy's in a car. I'm like, can you take us to the airport? And he's like, how much? And I start pulling out Polish money. And I pulled out, I think, a 50 maybe. And he's like, nah. And I pull out 100. And he's like, okay. So he took us, and then you gave him this huge tip, and we found out he was Ukrainian.
Absolutely.
Which was great.
Sergey was his name.
Sergey.
Coolest guy.
He was like, you made that dude year, man.
Well, I had Polish money, and what was I going to do? Change it back? It was $40. I mean,
That's hot.
150 Slotsky. I think Slotsky is how you pronounce it.
That was
a lot. It's four to one. About, well, maybe not quite 4 to 1, 3.5 to 1. So 150 is about roughly 40 US dollars, maybe.
He was stoked.
$35. And we had three different Ubers that kept canceling on us. I don't know what the deal. And then the second guy pulled up, saw all our luggage and said, I'm not taking you, and canceled. He was angry. And, we were like, are we even going to get to the airport in time to catch our flight? So Alex said that he uses the highest. I think you have to scroll down on Uber to get the luxury, the limo. Because every time Alex would pull an Uber, it was like a big Mercedes car, beautiful car. And he just got the highest level Uber. And it's not an issue of cost, because you Ubered us around the city. And what's the most you ever paid for an Uber? It was like $1, $2.
I looked at it on my banking statements this morning because I was trying to figure out, you know, what costs what during the trip. And I had to catch up on some things since I've been gone. And I think the highest Uber charge that I had was like $2.10.
Yeah.
You're Ubering everywhere, dude. I mean, like, some of those rides were like, you know, all the way from one side of the city, all the way to the other side of the city, two of us.
Yeah, so, and another thing, did you drink, John Mollison, did we drink Merlot? We saw the movie Sideways together, and we still No, I didn't drink any Merlot, John. Didn't drink any Merlot. Had some red wine, though. Had some, but not Merlot. So, lost my train of thought. What were we talking about just before that, Jimmy? Oh, yeah. So, my phone, I'm pretty hard on my phone. About a year ago, I was getting ready to back out of my garage. I was in a hurry thinking about a lot of things, and I left my phone on top of my car. And I backed out of my garage and pulled away and went to the restaurant, Waffle House, I think it was. And I realized it in my phone. And I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Thank you, Justin. Justin says he's been waiting for these stories. Oh, we had a great time. It was we got stories. We could keep telling stories. So anyway, this priest freeing me on my phone, it got driven over. And there's construction. I think a gravel truck drove over it. And I came and there was laying in the middle of the street because it had fallen off my car probably when I pulled forward. I backed out and then pulled forward. It fell off. But it worked like a year. Well, it decided to finally kick the bucket when we're in Ukraine. And I'm telling you, you know, when I went to Europe in 2018, which is the last time I traveled internationally, having cell service was kind of a luxury. You know, I had it and I used the Google Maps and I'm like, really, you have cell service over here? Isn't that cost a lot? And it's like $10 a month with AT&T. Well, in 3 years, you better not travel without cell service. Because you need it all the time. Like we had to have the COVID test to come back to get in the US. And if you didn't have a cell phone, you could not have, well, maybe you possibly could have gotten it, but you had to go and scan a QR code and on your cell phone and then show them that when they did the test. And then they would email you, which I guess you could use your computer at your hotel. But without a phone that you could scan and get the QR code and show that to them and get your access, it was very hard. Everybody had a smartphone. And everybody had service. Now, many of them may have been Polish people, but I don't think. I mean, we met some of the people there were not Polish people. So it's a need. It's a requirement that you need.
You couldn't travel internationally as an American without a cell phone right now. Think about when we got to
Ukraine. Thank you, John. thank you, Jimmy. Go ahead, Jimmy.
When we got to Ukraine, I had to download the app.
Oh, yeah. This is hilarious.
It was awful. So I wasn't vaccinated when we left. So I had to get negative PCR tests before entering. And when we get to Ukraine, we're coming into the airport and the lady says, show me your vaccination card. And I said, I'm not vaccinated, but I have a negative PCR test. And she said, well, you have to download the Donner app in order to come in to Ukraine. And then you have to quarantine after you download the app. So I go to download the app and it was as if they had invented the app that day. And it didn't even take American phone numbers.
Yeah, because you have to put your phone number in so it can text you to make sure that it's the right phone. When you enter in your phone number and it doesn't go.
Yeah, it was awful.
And she would not let us go without it.
Right. And there was a guy in the airport trying to come back in the other direction of the line saying, I've been here for a few days. Let me go out. That I guess was.
Oh, he looked like he was going crazy.
He was going crazy.
He said, I've been here 3 days.
Yep. And so of course I start freaking out. I'm like, dude, I'm end up stuck in this stupid airport. And so fortunately we had a Ukrainian driver waiting for us at the airport.
On the other side
of the airport.
Or on the other side of immigration rather.
On the other side of immigration, right. So we used that number, the promoter's number.
We asked him if we would let his use his number. Now that means that he's connected to the app. And if we if we don't follow protocol, he's in trouble, but he allowed us to do that.
Yeah. And so we used his number to get on the app. And then it says,
Because and then so he got the code and sent us the code, and then we entered that code in.
Right. Just in order to get the app on my phone to get into, to get out of the airport, to get into the country. And then it was like, take a photo. And it was this big dog and pony show because I couldn't. It was like every,
yeah.
You remember that every time?
Yeah, you're so it was, you couldn't get it to accept your photo. You kept turning your head and rotating your head and
trying everything. But we got, and it was like,
we were there for over 2 hours.
Easy.
Trying to figure out how to get out of the airport.
Easily.
Through immigration. She was not going to let us in until you had that app installed.
No. And I wouldn't have been as freaked out if we wouldn't have seen the guy that said, I've been here for 3 days trying to run out the airport, the line the other way. And I'm like, oh no, dude.
And my phone had died because we had, we could charge it on Lufthansa. And so, but you charge your phone, which was lucky. And there was only one cable. And so you charge your phone and my phone started to die and I was going to charge it up. And it was a certain room. It was like no man's land. You get off the plane. I didn't see any restrooms. There must have been a restroom. And you're waiting to get through immigration. And then once you get through immigration, you collect your bags, and then you go through customs to get out. So it was like this holding area that really nobody's supposed to spend much time in. And I could, I looked for outlets where I could plug in my phone. Now it's 220 volts, so you have to have a transformer. There were no place to charge my phone. I mean, there were no outlets. I looked. I mean, so if your phone had died, I don't know what we would have done. And thank God we got through. And then you're supposed to take a PCR test within three days. And we get to the hotel and we ask the concierge who spoke English, we need a PCR test. And they book a nurse to come and tell what happened with that.
Well, we were weary from flying all the way across, halfway across the world. And so we set our alarms because she was supposed to come at like 9, I think.
It was supposed to come at 10.
10. So we set our alarms. She didn't come. I don't care
no,
what.
No, she was not there.
She did not come. And so.
Knock on our hotel room door.
She shows up.
At 11.
At 11.
And she was so mad. Oh my gosh, she was mad.
Dude, she stabbed my brain. The back of my brain. She's like,
and she says, why you not open the door? She spoke broken English. And she was just torqued.
She was not happy at all.
But, you know, we got the test. The next day it was negative, and well, so we could continue with our deal.
To your point, without a smartphone, you couldn't travel now. There's no way. We would have gotten stuck so many times without two phones. In COVID days, you almost need a travel partner and two smartphones.
Yeah. I would not want to. Yeah. But COVID makes it that you need that. I would say, I don't know, even without it though. I mean, there were times that unrelated to COVID items that you, I mean, your boarding pass, they text you your boarding pass. You know, this was not a thing.
They changed the gate. The one flight in Germany, they changed the gate last minute. And we got that email like literally 15 minutes before we get on the plane. And I'm like, what if I wouldn't have checked my email? That kind of stuff. It's like, it was so strange, you know, like so many of the flights of being shuttled on and shuttled off. And it was just, I mean, if COVID has taught us anything, it's taught us that there's hardly anything that really, really works. Almost everything in the world is like hanging on by a thread.
So another thing I'd like to talk about is if there's any musicians, guitarists listening. So I went out and bought this expensive case that looks like it has AK-47 in it. It's to put my expensive Taylor guitar. And I spent $300 on this case. And that's one of the reasons why nobody wanted to take us, because my case is too big. It doesn't fit sideways in a trunk. You have to find another way to maybe spool down a seat and make it go through the trunk into the front seat to find, or back seat to find a room. And so Jimmy, instead, very smart man, longtime musician, just had a soft, what do you call that case?
A soft gig bag.
Well, no, it wasn't a soft gig bag. It was, had a hard sides. It was, I mean, I've got an acoustic guitar gig bag that doesn't have any soft sides, but anyway, it's light. The guitar and the case was very light. My case weighed 75 pounds and it's heavy and bulky. But you bring an inexpensive guitar, like you don't bring your Taylor. Like I brought my Taylor. I would not want to lose my Taylor over, you know, very thousands of dollars of guitar. You bought an inexpensive guitar that you, like a $200 guitar that sounds really good. And so if it gets messed up, it's not a huge loss. And life was so much easier for you. We had 8 flights total. 3 to get to Warsaw, 1 to get to Kiev, 1 from Kiev back to Warsaw, and 3 to get back. So 8 times you never had to check your guitar. There was one time where they said, there's no room on the flight. They're going to have to check it. But they didn't.
Right. They never did. And in fact, one time it got its own seat. It did.
So I thought, I mean, I Googled this. Will I have to check my guitar? Can I, if I bring a case? ain't got much, but at least I travel light.
That's right.
You know, and there's that thought process because I remember in Singapore, I met this guy and I had these bags, these big bags. And a part of it because I took I took soybeans to Japan with me. So I had this big case full of, but I also brought all my clothes because I'd go there in the fall for a month. And there's this guy sitting next to me, American, and we laid over in Singapore. And he says, "What you got all those bags for?" And I talked to him about it. And he said, "Man, you got to fly light, you know, and just take a few clothes and have it done at the hotel. And it's so much less muscle, much less fuss." And you think your friend, Mike does that.
Oh yeah, he does.
He travels light, sure. But there's a downside to that. What happened when you did some laundry in Kiev?
Higher than the hotel, dude.
You only did how many shirts or whatever?
It was like three or four shirts, like 3 pairs of jeans, like 3 or 4 pairs of socks, 3 or 4 boxers. And it was like $100, dude. And so, at the time that I got that bill, I was convinced that you could buy half of Ukraine for $100. Because we couldn't spend money. Like, our money was going so far. I was like, this place is awesome. And I got that laundry bill. I was like, wow, really?
So, yeah, I like the idea of traveling light and doing laundry. But how do you do it without breaking the bank on doing the laundry? I still got to figure that out. But, I mean, by the end of the trip, hauling that, I'm definitely not hauling that big, heavy AK-47 case. And it's over long. So you got to take it to a different place. You got to take it to the oversized baggage. And then when you get your bags, it's not on the regular carousels, on the oversized baggage carousel. And then they unload that last. So here we're in Nashville. And we got our bags, except I'm waiting for my oversized bag. You're outside smoking a cigarette, waiting for me to get done. Finally, I get my bag so we can catch our Uber and get home. So, you know, we got to my place at like 12:30 in the morning. And it's just overwhelmingly difficult to try to, I'm going to definitely go and use your method. And if I ever have to check it and if it gets damaged, well, take an inexpensive guitar that I won't cry, yeah. You're definitely very smart on that. And I don't know what I'm going to do with that case because I'm not going to use it for traveling. So that was one mistake I made. And also it costs money. You have to check. So you didn't pay for that, but you have to, when you go international, you pay $100 for your first bag check and $75 for your second. And so we both checked our luggage for our clothes. I had to check my second, which was my guitar. You carried yours on. Very smart. So you only had one bag to check. I had 2. So I had to do that for 4 times. The flight to Warsaw, the flight to Kiev, the flight back to Warsaw, and the flight home. 4 times I had to pay that $75 fee. You saved that. So it's also less expensive. So you live and learn, I guess.
All right. Well, next time.
Next time. And when is next time? Tell me your thoughts, Jimmy, on traveling and what they were before we went on the trip and what they are now.
We'll be back very soon. I predict that by spring, we'll be back to many countries easily. I'm already working on it.
So has your attitudes changed playing internationally?
That bug has absolutely bit me 100%, man.
Love it. That was my number one accomplishment going on this trip. Number one, getting Jimmy excited about traveling internationally and playing internationally.
Yeah. Well, what was so funny about it, man, is we were over there and we're in the hotel room. Like, you know, we should like go to this country and play. We should go to this country and play. We should like tour all these other. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, well, I know a guy in Sweden that can get us some gigs. And it's like, well, I got this buddy over here in England. He can get us something. And then we were meeting people the whole way. I'm stoked about it, man. Spring, I'm really looking forward to it next year. I'm just now readjusting. It's taken me this long to get turned back around because
a jet lag situation. Yeah, jet lag, especially as you get older, they say it's more difficult. The best thing to do is to stay awake as long as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you wake up at 4 a.m, eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting better. I slept till about 7:30 this morning. So
yeah,
I'm getting closer. I'm pretty much back to normal.
I am today.
You know,
yesterday was rough, but today I'm
back. And that's part of it. That's never going to go away. You know, the jet lag thing.
Sure.
Some people say it's easier going east versus west.
Seemed like it to me, man. Because when we got there, it didn't bother me at all. Coming back, it hammered me. But it's all good. I'd do it again tomorrow.
I'm already thinking, you know, I mean, looking at my photos and my videos, and I put my first video up today on YouTube. Got so much content, although I have no video for whatever reason. Somebody walked by and knocked my camera on the last night, which was your favorite gig, and I have no video from that. Other than Alex took a few short 1 minute videos of my performance there, but I recorded your entire performance, which I sent that link to you today. So,
awesome.
Yeah. What was the name of that place? It was a biker bar. Do you remember the name of it? It was a true venue. I mean, it was a true live venue. The one before that was a restaurant. We played in the basement of a restaurant, kind of a small venue. And, you know, but that place, and then also the one at Smila, I think, was kind of a banquet hall, kind of a restaurant thing. But that place was just the sole purpose. The only purpose for that business to exist was for live music.
Sure.
And that was the only one like, no. Well, the one in Dnipro, the back room, they have a stage. The stage was like 10 feet off the ground. It's like you wouldn't want to fall off that stage. It wasn't 10, but it was high. It was the highest stage I've seen in recent
years. Yeah, I remember because the guy was like, you want a sound check? And I was like, not really, man. Because it's like, if I get up there, I'm up there until I'm done playing.
Yeah, there were no stairs. They had a little stool that you could kind of climb. That was actually a pretty good gig. I really enjoyed playing that gig. Those people were really into it. They were very attentive. They weren't talking. They were there for the music, and that was a really good gig.
Yeah.
But you know, as far as crowd response, the festival, those people are in it.
Oh, yeah.
From the first song, they're singing along, clapping.
Well, everybody. I mean, they ate it up. They
ate it up big time. Yeah. Crystal says she can't wait to see the videos. Yeah, I'm sure Jimmy will share a bunch of them with you. Yep. I started posting mine on my YouTube. I posted one today. First two songs in Smila, including the introduction in Ukrainian.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Amazing. Great times. All worth it. Do it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. We're just getting started.
Just getting started. So.
Yeah. It's good to be back, man.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you for joining us. And we'll see you next time. We're back on schedule every Monday at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. We'll be back unless something conflicts happens, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you very much.
See you, brother.